Oh boy. Are we doing it in fast forward? Are we just doing this thing called life rapidly in fast forward, just going ahead, plowing through with that kind of quickness that makes you feel like we're always in a rush? We're always in a rush. The hamster wheel of life, the rat race continues. Yeah, a little bit. Right when you wake up to the moment your head hits the pillow again, is it tough to reflect? Is it tough to think about all the many things you do immediately after I leave work? Usually it's pick up one more thing. Just pick up one more thing, from diapers to wipes. All out of milk, we need olive oil. Low on toilet paper, need some eggs. You know what I mean. You gotta stop off before you get home. Stop off to pick up one of the kids or both the kids. Stop off to put some gasoline in your tank. Stop off to go to Silberman's for a double scoop. Stop off to find a toy to incentivize or bribe the kids to do some things you need them to do. Stop off. And then you finally get home. And it's just the kind of exhaustion. It's not a bad feeling. It's just the kind of exhaustion that makes 90% of your brain shut off. So you're working with 10% of that brain. I am leaving Safeway the other day. I'm on my way out and I see this guy's got the table set up, yelling at people, "You got time to help the local libraries? Hey, you got time to sign this for the local libraries?" And I'm like, shit, he's going to get me on the way out. He's going to get me. Can I navigate any exit? I'm already thinking about departing in a way that's so stealth. He'll never see me because I don't want to let him down. The truth is, I don't have the time. I do care about libraries. I love libraries. I love the local libraries. But this guy's right there outside of Safeway where everybody exits. "Hey, can I ask you to sign here for the local libraries? Improve the local libraries." And he hits me. We even lock eyes when I'm leaving with diapers. This guy looks at me and I'm in such a rush because I still need to get the six-year-old and then get home. And I'm so hungry and I'm so thirsty. And look at me whining already. But stay with me. This episode's about to heat up. It's about to pick up. It's March Madness time, folks. It's a good time of year. But this guy just locks eyes with me and he says, "Hey, you got time to help with the local libraries?" And I'm just like, "I'm so sorry." That's all I said. I'm so sorry. I didn't say maybe next time. I didn't say no thanks, not interested. I could have told him more about my life. "Hey, I'm in a rush to pick up my daughter." But instead, it's just, "I'm so sorry." Oh, so awkward. This guy's like, sorry about what? I was once in San Diego leaving a Ralph's and a lady walks up to me with a clipboard and says, "Can you sign to save the whales? Can you help out the whales?" And I was just like, are you fucking kidding? We're always in a rush, right? Leaving the grocery store. No one has time for anything. But the whales? The whales need me to sign your clipboard? How am I going to help? Are we talking about SeaWorld? Like, we don't want them taken out of the ocean and put into SeaWorld where they develop psychosis? And I know that thanks to the film Blackfish, which was a tough watch, but probably a necessary watch as a guy that used to have a season pass to SeaWorld and really enjoyed the whale show until that documentary, like so many others. Are we still doing that? Taking whales out of the ocean and putting them in a big pool? And saying, "Here comes, what was the name? Shamu!" And once in a while, Shamu bites one of the trainers and everyone gets shocked. But the truth is, none of us should be shocked. It's like Chris Rock's joke about Siegfried and Roy. That tiger went tiger. That tiger didn't go crazy. That tiger just went tiger on Siegfried. I think Siegfried was bitten, or maybe Roy. "But do you have time for the whales? Can I get your signature? Can you help out the whale?" What the fuck do you need me to do for the whales? And let's be honest, what do you need me to do for the local libraries? I actually go to the local libraries and I love them. They need to be updated? No, they'll be extinct soon. You think the next generation of humans are going into a building full of books? Full of books? No! There's so many things that are going to be extinct in the next 30 years because I got my finger on the pulse of what the youths, what the teens, what are the adolescents are going to be interested in when they grow up and become the future spenders and consumers of this country. And it ain't libraries or newspapers, and it certainly isn't terrestrial radio either. So I finally get home. Let me continue this story. I had to say, "I'm so sorry. I will not help your local libraries." But I did get the diapers and I got the wipes and I got my daughter. My daughter said, can we go pick up the other daughter together? And I said, okay, that makes it a little tougher, but sure, because the older daughter likes to go back to the daycare to see her old teachers. And the younger daughter likes to see the older daughter when we pick her up with three marshmallows, because my younger daughter loves marshmallows and that's an incentive to get in the wagon and come home. But right as we're leaving the driveway, I'm loading up the wagon with marshmallows and blankets. We got snacks. We got water. Okay, we good to go. All right, let's go pick up Remy. And then I hear, this is not a joke, I hear on a megaphone,
San Rafael Police Department, sir, come out with your hands up. You are under arrest. San Rafael Police Department approaching. Come out with your hands up.
The megaphone? We have an arrest happening in the streets of Pleasantville? Now, this is a pretty safe area. But when you hear the amplified voice of a police officer arresting someone in a house, what are we, barricaded? My mind goes in all directions. It gets a little nutty. It gets a little crazy. I'm the opposite of cool, calm, and collected. And what happens at that point? Megaphone blaring into the streets. Come out with your hands up. I'm like, holy shit, where is it coming from? And just at that point, my wife pulls up into the driveway in her RAV4, and I got a weird look on my face. But I always have a weird look on my face, so it's not that alarming. But she's like, what? And I said, just listen, just listen. The six-year-old's talking. I go, just listen, just listen. And there they hear it again.
Santa Fe Police Department, sir, come out with your hands up.
And I'm like, it's getting serious. Someone's not coming out. What street is it coming from? Like, my directional hearing's no good. I'm like, is this our house? Is this two houses over? Is it Penny Royal? What is it? Las Ovejas all the way to Patricia? Where in TL is this? And my wife goes, okay, you pick up Remy and I'll just go find it. I was like, what? Who are you all of a sudden? Chuck Norris? I'll go find it. She'll take care of business. She'll handle the local vigilantes. And my wife just boom, zooms off and starts looking for the action. She later found the action and I was texting people, are you hearing this? Are you hearing this? Are you hearing this? And she said to me, she did lock eyes with me, just like the guy who wanted me to help improve the local libraries. She locked eyes with me and said, Josh, look like everything's okay. Because kids pick up your energy. And I was able to do the opposite of that. Interestingly, she says, look like everything's okay. How about some calm energy around your six-year-old? Because when you look totally flustered, guess what? That energy permeates into your kids and it's not good. You do want to look cool, calm, and collected when the police are making arrests in the hills of Terra Linda. And I said, okay. And then my six-year-old's looking at me and says, what does arrest mean? Who's being arrested? Is it someone we know? What's under arrest? And I'm answering none of these questions. I'm that in my head. Usually I'm really good with answering all the many questions of a six-year-old and a two-year-old, but I just go on mute. I am on mute looking at my phone, texting people, calling people, what's going on? I don't have a clue. Later in the day, one of the neighbors explained that there was a guy who attacked an exterminator with a crowbar and a baseball bat, and it got ugly, but it was a relief. I don't know why it was a relief, because that's still a pretty violent story that one of our neighbors attacked an exterminator with a crowbar and a bat. But I was like, oh, that's all okay. Yeah, probably shouldn't have done that. And then I go on with my evening. I watch the Warriors lose to the Knicks, start filling out brackets, and everything falls into place. But for about 20 minutes, I was just a complete mess, the type of mess that marshmallows can't even save. And everyone else around me seemed to be happy, enjoying the sun. It's like I'm in my own vortex of emotion. But how do I get through that? Why am I so happy right now? Why am I so healthy and enthusiastic about my existence? Well, I'll explain why as we get ready for episode 232. Here we go!
There's a reason for the sunshine. Why I'm feeling so high must be the season when that love light shines all around us. So let that feeling grab you deep inside and send you reeling where your love can hide, and then go stealing through the moonlit nights with your lover.
Come on!
Hey,
let that love flow, motherfuckers, for a moment. Just let the love flow, won't you? Why, Josh? Why are you feeling so good? Is it March Madness? The Aztecs are a 5 seed? facing off with UAB on Friday at 10:45 a.m. You're filling out your brackets. You're entering the pools, getting ready to gamble. No, it's not that. Is it the fact that you just cooked a bunch of corned beef and that's your favorite food and it came out pretty well? I made it two ways, one in the slow cooker, one in the oven. Guess which one was better? The oven. Found a good recipe to wrap it in foil and douse it in some spicy Dijon mustard. It was so much better than the slow cooker this year. You explain it. Is it the fact that you got some Jameson Irish whiskey to ease the stress at night? No, it's none of that. It's none of that. It's the fact that, all right, drum roll, please. You guys ready for this? Are you sitting down? Buckle up. I'm in a cult. Woo! It took a while. It took a while, but I finally found a cult. And I think that's our goal as humans, to find a group that soothes every aspect of our lives. Give me emotional health. Give me physical health. Who's going to be my guru? Found one. Hadn't found one till I was 42. And I know all the tools out there. Get a therapist. Take that medication. Tap, tap there. Maybe go on a run. It's all good. All those are good things. But my guru's name is Wim Hof. Ooh, who's this? It's a guy I learned about on HBO Real Sports many years ago. And I thought he was a complete lunatic. The Iceman. He's like in his late 60s, I think. This Dutch guy who talks like this. Hey, guys, breathe in, breathe out. All right, guys, breathe in, breathe out. And you're like, simple, breathe in, breathe out. And he says, all the love, all the power. Have a good life. I'm the Iceman. The Dutch guy who speaks to you through YouTube for 10 minutes a day. But what are those 10 minutes? It's called Wim Hof breathing. I think it's a form of ancient pranayama breathing. So breath work. But it's the type of breath work where you hyperventilate slightly. You feel your body get a little cool slightly. You could actually feel the beat of blood going through your veins slightly. And it's an intense 10 minutes. You can look it up on YouTube right now, called Wim Hof breathing. And some of you have heard of it. Some of you haven't. But how do you join a cult? You start with finding people that make you feel good. Wim Hof. I don't even know if that's his name. Is it? Is his name Wim Hof? Is it Iceman? He also does the ice plunge, which became popular recently. I'm not doing any of that, just the breathing part. And guess what, folks? It's working. Sometimes I get caught up in a fad and I try it for like 1 or 2 weeks and I was like, no, nothing. I'm not feeling anything, but that's nice. And all the supplements, like I've had so many supplements recommended. Oh, you should take bee pollen. You should take bone marrow. You should take magnesium. You should take vitamin D. You should take vitamin B. And I attempt all of it. Do I really feel the effects of any supplement? No. None of it. I've never taken a supplement and said, now I'm feeling the energy, or now I'm feeling stronger or more awake. However, my wife joins me each night on the couch at about 7:30. We put on the YouTube video, Wim Hof breathing. You do 30 rapid, but there's no pause. Deep breaths. I just fainted on the mic. No, so you do 30 of those, and then he says, now hold your breath for about a minute and a half. Hold it on an exhale, and then inhale 15, and you do it 3 times. And at the end, for some weird reason, and this is science, there's more carbon dioxide flowing into my blood. My cells are finally breathing. I don't really know. I'm exiting, or I'm, exhaling. All this carbon dioxide that I don't want, but it's good for anxiety, depression. It's good for your mood. It's good for energy. It's good for sleep. It's good for immunity. I think it is. I know I might come back here on a future episode and go, that Wim Hof nonsense was a bunch of bullshit. But right now, it's been like 3 weeks, maybe a whole month of doing it about 5 or 6 times a week. I'm telling you, folks, I know it sounds like an infomercial, but it's not. It works. It's the first thing I think I've ever found that works. I feel good. Things are lighter. That's what we strive for, right? Yes, and also March is the best. Here we got the big tourney starting on Thursday. And only 25% of our family is sick. Nah, maybe 50. I'm still waiting on all 4 of us to not be sick. What's going around? Can someone tell me what's going around? But we're not going to go back to masks. We're not going back to any of that. Don't tell us what to do. Don't you dare tell us what to do. If you teach history, you can understand why there are so many conspiracy theorists. You know, when you're growing up, or at least if you're my age, there aren't that many conspiracy theorists. And nowadays, it seems like everyone's a conspiracy theorist. Like, don't trust that. Nope, fake news. Ah, very skeptical, very cynical about what you hear, what you're being told to do. Because history allows you to look at the hysteria that the initial spike of any news event, any big event in history, the way people react is like batshit crazy. Immediately the government goes wild. And then 4 or 5 years later, you go, I'm not sure we needed to react that way. That's history in a nutshell. You know what else history is? Just talking about death and death and death and death and emotionless responses by students and desks. I'm talking about atrocities and massacres and wars, and they're writing down dates, and they're, it's like, what is a history class? Really, what is it? Are we trying to convey the emotion of a period from yesteryear? I mean, we could do it with primary sources and videos and discussion, and it's good for critical thinking skills. But really, are we going to stop for a moment and just focus on humans kill humans, and that just happens? I mean, from a scientific standpoint, there's this guy, this neuroscientist I was listening to, and he talked about we as mammals, we are doing this a little more than any other animal, killing each other, killing ourselves. We have no problem with it either. I would love to say we do have a problem with it, but why is it still happening, and why is it always happening in parts of our planet? Why can't we curb this? Like, why isn't world peace attainable? People will laugh if I say I believe world peace can be achieved. That's a laughable declaration. Can it be achieved? No, because there's a way we're wired, and it's part of our brain. And this is what the neuroscientist said. Actually, let me get his name. I want to Google his name because he's written some books and he's a pretty impressive dude. Let your love flow. Hold on. What is his name? Okay, there it is. R. Douglas Fields, PhD. He had a book called Why We Snap, and also The Electric Brain. And he said the same pathway in our brain that results in violent outbursts, the same pathway, neural pathway that creates rage, is also the same pathway that enables us to act heroically and altruistically before our conscious brain knows what we're even doing. So a stranger who dives into a frigid winter to save a drowning child, it's also the same part of your brain that will snap, suddenly snap in an altercation when you feel attacked, or if you're the attacker. There are triggers that can unleash a fit of rage in Homo sapiens that none of us really understand. Like, why is that? Why do we have the ability to kill on a large level? I know it's a dark topic. I feel the need to move on. But we could teach that we killed this many and they killed this many. And those civilians were killed and this bomb killed those people. And this weapon destroyed that civilization. And then this invasion killed that. And then are we really getting to the root of it? Why the fuck are we still doing this? And why is it part of our wiring? And some people could say, maybe it's not part of the wiring. But this neuroscientist says it absolutely is. From the dawn of civilization, the first recorded history of humans, it's wars, killings, and killings, and killings. That doesn't sound like a healthy way to disagree about something, but hey, I got Wim Hof breathing on my side, so it's safe to say there will be no rage. Or maybe Wim Hof is the reason that there will be no rage. That's why I'm in the cult. You could join the cult. I mean, eventually after the breathing, all of us just go near an ocean and have sex. That's what all cults do, right? I mean, look, Wild Wild Country, you could watch any docuseries about a cult. Aren't you waiting for the sex part, right? You're like, okay, and then they did yoga for a few months, and then they all moved to this little village for a few months, and then they got hooked on this drug for a few months, and then you're like, where's the group sex? It's coming. It's always coming. In a cult docuseries, you know it's coming. Sheesh. And then they're all coming. You know it's coming, and they're all, uh-oh, he's working blue today, folks. You might want to reel it in a bit. Maybe reel it into PG-13. You never know who's listening. Had a thought. I'm going to float this out there. The group think you hear nowadays because there's trending topics and people now look on social media. What's trending? Well, that's how I think about that. And if you look on Twitter, if you're a sports fan and you look on Twitter, they have trending sports topics. And this is all sports media is nowadays. There's not really like any original thinking. It's groupthink. Anyone who has a sports talk radio show is probably going to ESPN.com. The recipe is too easy. With the internet and with all the social media trending topics, you just take those and then you spew thoughts that have already been thought. Takes that have already been broadcasted. Then you take calls from people. Or read tweets and emails from people who are already going to the well of groupthink. It's all groupthink. Sports talk radio has changed. It's evolved so much where there are some good shows, there's some good hosts, but a lot of it is unlistenable, right? Because it's just the obvious shit. It's what's trending. But I have memories not only listening to sports radio as a little kid, but when I worked in it at first, it wasn't like everyone was relying on the internet at all times. I know I sound like a fossil. I sound very old, but there was some uniqueness to how you would format a show. What should we talk about today was an actual discussion. You didn't just go, draft is coming up. Let's talk about the number one prospects in the draft and then break down what they're all about. Now you kind of could take any angle on certain things. Maybe that's why podcasting is so popular, because it is niche. Niche? I don't know. But you're able to find exactly what you want to hear. And maybe sometimes you find a podcast that sounds unique, like it's not like all the others, and you're drawn to that. But if you listen to any sports radio show, or even, I guess, an AM talk radio show, it all sounds alike by now, right? When it existed before the internet, a host really had to have a unique angle. I feel like that's a career nobody would want anymore. Sports talk radio host, and it was like a dream job for me, a dream career. But here's what led me to think about this. Two things. Number one, I worked with a couple of guys, Guy Haberman, John Middlecoff at 95.7. This is like 10 years ago. And these guys had a radio show. And then they got fired, just like all of us radio hosts. We all have the same story. At some point, you get fired, you get canned. And then what they did, because they still had an audience, is they took their loyal audience into this sphere of podcasting. And then they really understood the business side of it and started monetizing their product and started getting sponsors and some big time endorsements. And I heard their last podcast ever. Turns out that they're done with it after 10 years. And they were explaining, I listened to their show and they said, when we were in our last year in radio, we were each making $60,000 per year. This is a San Francisco radio show where the hosts are making $60,000 a year. You're wondering, how do you even survive on that in the Bay Area? And then they said about 5 or 6 years into their podcasting, they started making seven figures. They started making millions. It became their entire livelihood. The ability to buy a house was because they understood not just how to stay committed to podcasting, like do an episode each day, you put it on YouTube, you know how to use the socials to gain more listeners. Like, these guys knew what they were doing. They were young, so they understood all the many avenues to explore, all the many things I'm not doing, but they were on YouTube. They were probably, you know, live streaming. They probably were on TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat and you name it. They were doing everything you had to do to gain a following, and they did. But when they said they went from $60,000 a year in radio to making a million, at least seven figures, I was actually blown away. Blown the fuck away. What? What are sports radio hosts even making? If you were telling a kid right now about promising career fields, you would never say radio. And that's kind of sad in a sense, but the idea that in 2015, I had students tell me being a YouTuber would make us more money than what you're doing right now. You are a history teacher, and I laughed it off because I actually thought they were kidding with me. I didn't understand that YouTubers made this kind of money through clicks and subscriptions and clicks. But I think a lot of young people, not just being a YouTuber, but for some reason creating your own brand, your own channel, and monetizing it that way, there's so much money in that. I'm realizing how many people are trying to explore that right now. I'm also realizing how little I'm doing in that scope, and I probably should. I don't know. This is a hobby. This is just a side gig. It's not even a gig, Josh. What are you doing? You're babbling into a mic while the family's trying to sleep. I don't know. I just know there are no teens listening to sports radio anymore. They're not listening to music on the radio. They have access to everything at all times. That's weird, right? Right in your pocket. You have every song ever? You have every song ever? Huh. And you have every show ever? Okay. And you could Google anything you want? Watch any YouTube video you want? Okay. And then we're putting you in desks and tell you, wait till I tell you about the Korean War. And they're like, could just Google it. That could take 3 minutes. I could Google Korean War. Read the first paragraph on Wikipedia. Maybe watch a 2-minute YouTube video about it. And then I'll learn about the Korean War. And I'm like, no, we're going to do a week on the 38th parallel into the demilitarized zone. Of course, Truman felt the need to contain the spread of communism. What? What is school? I like teaching school, but soon the students are going to be like, hold on, hold the phone. I think we could do school electronically. Now, it's a socializing experience, which I think we all understand the value of. But the actual content and curriculum, I'm ready for it to evolve a little bit. I'm ready for us to not feel like we're just wrestling gators, wrestling crocs. whack-a-mole followed by wrestling. The payoff. Keep them interested. Keep them interested. If you see them start to get tired, say something interesting. Be interesting. Be stimulating. You're competing with all the things ever on their phones. You're competing with the shortest attention spans mankind has ever seen. Be interesting. Don't you dare show them a black and white documentary with British narration. Don't you dare. The next day, the entire village knew it was time for an uprising. And that's when, of course, they knew things would never be the same. Black and white footage? British narrator? What are you doing? Holy shit. The other thing. Oh, I forgot to say the other thing about sports radio. Is that there's this guy in the morning on 95.7, Bonte Hill. He also does Warriors post game on TV. I've listened for, you know, my commute is like 5 minutes. So I've listened for about a year for 5 minutes. I like to flip it on in the morning. What are they talking about? How crazy. I have no allegiance to KNBR, but that's what happened in my life. I'm on the FM side. I'm just so hip. And Bonte in the morning, he is a pretty good host. I mean, he's pretty good at times. It's nothing great. But when it was time to be critical of Warriors forward Draymond Green because this guy was just so violent on the court and he got suspended indefinitely, Bonte was critical. Fine, right? That's what sports radio is. It's critical. It's very judgmental radio. Judging players, evaluating players, talking about the drama, the scintillating drama. And so I don't really remember it, but Bonte probably criticized Draymond just like I criticized Draymond. I mean, the guy's tough to cheer for. He's a good player, but God damn. I'm ready for the Draymond era to end. He's just annoying, you know, to yell at the refs that much after every single play. And then the occasional cheap shot. And we're not going for championships anymore. We're not doing anything this year. So it's not like he's integral. He's essential for a championship run. No, none of that. But after a win, Bonte's right there on television. And Draymond puts on the headset. And Bonte's next to Chris Mullin and Darrell Wright, Festus Ezeli. This is a very inside story. If you're a Warriors fan, you understand what I'm saying. But Bonte's the host in the postgame show. And he goes, all right, we're being joined at Chase by Draymond Green. Hi, Draymond. How are you? And Draymond goes, I'm surprised you're talking to me. After everything you said. So clearly Draymond's feelings were hurt. Draymond is a guy who talks more shit than anyone in the world, but he has such thin skin he couldn't take it from a sports radio host. And in that moment, Bonte didn't sink. He just continued with his question. What's it like to play in New York at Madison Square Garden? He kept his composure. He was very professional, very impressive. But I'm like, no way did Draymond just call out a host who was critical of a player who kept slapping and punching opponents with cheap shots to the point where the NBA had to suspend him. What are you going to come on the air and just defend him? No, everyone, most fans were like, look, Draymond, enough's enough, you know, fed up with it. But he comes on the television interview and he's like, I'm surprised you would even talk to me with all that shit you're talking about me. It's like, what? Oh, God, I would not have been okay with that. Just like the guy who wants to know if I want to help with local libraries. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. If I was a sports radio host and one of the players on TV says, I'm surprised you'll talk to me after all that you've said about me, Josh, I'd be like, I'm so sorry. And I wouldn't want to say that, but it's just weird the type of thin skin these athletes can have. What do you expect sports radio to be? I was impressed with Bonte, actually. And you got to kind of go into that profession knowing that you're not going to make some friends. If you have to call out, coaches should be fired. That's why the whole medium, it's a little harsh, right? That player should be cut. He's not good enough. He doesn't score enough. His arm is too weak. This team's making mistakes. I mean, that's the tone of sports radio. It's not negative. It's supposed to be entertaining. Actually, it's extremely negative. It could be funny at times. It could be fun, but it's for the fans. It's the voice of the fans. It's not really journalism. It's mainly entertainment. Back to my Wim Hof breathing in. 30 of those, you hold it for a minute and a half, and then you exhale for another 15 seconds, and it's straight euphoria. Euphoria. What else? Oh, when the guy says what else, that means he's got nothing else. Ah, I could say this and I could report this from the classroom. Guess what's still happening? Of all the dumb shit the older generations have done, you would think that the new generations aren't about that. They're just going to do things differently, right? The new and improved teens of America, looking at previous social norms that were just awful and choosing not to continue them, right? Hickeys still happen. Kids are still coming into class with hickeys. I mean, fat wounds. That's what they look like. Wounds. What happened to you? First of all, what's the origin of a hickey? Doesn't feel good, doesn't look good. I don't even think we can categorize that as anything sexual, right? A hickey? Some vampire shit sucking on a neck? Marking up a student? What is it? Is this territorial? Like, let's think about this together. What is it and why is it still happening? It always sounds like very, you know, 1950s car culture. And we'll have fun, fun, fun till the daddy takes the T-bird. Right when they called it necking. When they called making out necking and when everyone was in a varsity Letterman jacket. Right? Go back to Greece. Then you can see hickeys. You think hickeys maybe made its way into the 70s with what was hair? This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Okay, into the 80s, sure. Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, Madonna. I think hickeys were going in the 90s. Not that popular. It's 2024. The kids are still sucking on necks. It's the dumbest shit. It's so dated. That's what it is. It's just like an old school attack. Okay, great. You've been making out with someone and they vacuumed your neck. And now people notice, but here's the weird game. You're not supposed to bring it up, right? They're all embarrassed. They feel awkward now, but they like it because it was a consensual hickey. Or they maybe they should write that above the hickey in pen, consensual, so we know. Because that's society today. We don't want to be worried. Was that a consensual hickey experience? Oh, God, there's more. And they're big. And they're big, and they're raspberry red, and they're ugly. And I just have to teach to these kids with the hickeys on their necks. And I don't even say anything because that's awkward. And it's all awkward. Everything's awkward. All right. This episode's awkward, right? But we did it. We did episode 232. Very appreciative that you tuned in. What did we discuss? I'm not totally sure. Actually, I'm not sure. But maybe next time we could help save the whales, right? Your signature in front of Ralph's and Mission Valley is all we need. To save the whales. All right, get your brackets done. I got the Aztecs over UAB. Then I got the Aztecs over Auburn. Then the Aztecs match up with UConn again. Are you ready for that? In the Sweet 16, could the Aztecs and UConn match up again? Holy shit, this is so fun. Oh, baby. Pour out the Jameson. Let's get it started. Let's get it going. Leave a nice rating on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen. And here's a cyber hug from me to you. Much love, folks. This one's in the books. I'll talk to you soon.